All right, good evening, everyone. I'm going to call the July 8th, 2024 Yellow Transportation District Board of Directors meeting to order. I'll let the record reflect it is 6 p.m. on the dot, and we have a forum. All of my colleagues are here and present. With that, we are going to move to agenda item number 2, approval of the agenda for tonight's meeting.
Motion to approve. Second.
All right, a motion by Director Barrett, second by Director Stollard. Any other comments on our agenda? All right, seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? We now have an agenda. Before we start, a couple of different things I want to address. You may see some balloons and a makeshift throne with some candles on it over here. It is Director Lauren's 40th birthday today, and she decided to grace us with her presence at this meeting here this evening. So we all wish you a wonderful happy birthday. Thank you for spending your time with us. There are birthday cupcakes over there on the side as well for some sugar rush if people need it. It's over there. And thank you to our staff here for helping throw this together for Director Lauren this evening. Also, Sergio is here. Sergio is one of our Russian Caltrans. Unfortunately, cannot stay for the duration of our meeting here this evening, so he does have some comments on our agenda item that's coming up later. So I'm going to ask Sergio to come up and make his comments now before we go to our general public comment. So welcome, Sergio.
Thank you very much. Chair, Vice Chair, and Directors, really appreciate the opportunity to just say a few words here at the start of the agenda, and you allowing me to do so. So this is the first time that I'm here, and just wanted to just start by mentioning my appreciation for all of the work. Okay, sorry. I can hear all of the work that we've done together, our staff, your staff, I really want to commend Autumn Bernstein for all her leadership throughout the process of getting the Yellow project to where it is now. And also just to briefly mention a little bit about myself. I met many of you probably don't know me, so I spent 26 years with Caltrans. 20 of those was with districts in many different positions. More recently, I was in headquarters as a state pavement engineer, division chief over maintenance, and more recently, deputy director over maintenance and operations. I live in the city, so I'm locally living in the community, and when the opportunity came up upon Amergy's retirement to take the acting position within District 3 to act as the district director, I could not pass it up, and that's why I'm here, and I'm very much about partnership and working with all stakeholders on important initiatives and important projects moving forward. I also want to update this board that July 15th, Caltrans will be updating and releasing the new strategic management plan. This is going to cover the years 2024 to 2028. This is our old, or I should say our current strategic management plan. This is the last year, so again, we're updating it. It's going to focus on really 5 strategic goals, what we call the 4 core, plus organizational excellence related to people first. So safety, equity, climate action, and economic prosperity. I also want to just mention that I look forward to the actions this board is going to take on the Yellow 80 project coming up later on in the agenda. Unfortunately, I probably will not be here. I have other commitments that I need to go through, but you're in good hands for any questions for the district reasonable focus points. Greg Wong is here, as well as our project manager. And I'll take this opportunity to also acknowledge the Caltrans team, especially Greg and Greg Parrish, for all the leadership that they've displayed and all the hard work that they've put in together with the rest of the delivery team to get this project to where it is now. So again, thank you for the opportunity to just say these brief few words. I will not take more of your precious time. And if there's any questions for me, I just want to thank you and wish you well.
Thank you, Sergio. Thank you for taking the time to be here this evening.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to now move on to agenda item number 3, which is general public comment. General public comment is for items listed on the consent calendar or items that are not listed on the agenda. So if you have any general public comments for tonight's meeting, please come forward. Welcome.
Alan Perch. First, I want to clear the air. I sent you a number of emails of great concern about the draft cooperative agreement I got from Brian Abernath. And I think he I was concerned about this, very concerned about this draft contract and not being resolved because it basically said how much is this agency on the hook versus Caltrans, which is the mitigation and the follow through. And I thought this was still in the law. I've had talked with Kirk, and it seems to have been resolved. It seems you guys are not on the hook, and that's good. And I think that's appropriate. So what do you think I sent you on in that regard? I wish I'd got called back. That's fine. You don't need to worry about that. So thank you very much. Thank you for indulging. I'm sorry I took your time. I spent a lot of time writing this too, but that's all resolved. In terms of the other thing, we are now facing tremendous heat, climate change, we have fires, we have clearly climate disaster. And I want to reflect back to your vision, values, and priority sheets that basically says the core values are transparency, inclusivity, and accountability, domestic inequalities, and vulnerable communities, and particularly those people who wait for the bus and have to work outside or face with nothing, and disproportionately they left the bus who are in an executive position and have inside jobs. The third bullet is environmental sustainability and climate resilience. And the fourth is efficiency, innovation, responsibility. No words mentioned traffic congestion. No words mentioned these other values that seem to be override that the I-80 project. So this is a wonderful document, but are we living up to it? It's really important we do. We have a climate crisis. So I appreciate that and appreciate the document and the aspirations here, but we need to make this more than an aspirational document. I know you all most of you are volunteers here on the board and care deeply about the community, and this is a real challenge. This is a really hard point. But just like the South during the apartheid Jim Crow in the 60s, when all these civic leaders believed in integration, but just not yet. And that's why King is basically challenging those in the middle who are waffling. So we need to challenge ourselves. Even though we believe in climate change, we just aren't willing to make the tough choices right now. And our children are graduating. So thank you for this document, but we need to live forward, live up to it. And I'm going to try to remind you to do that. And I'm sorry if I'm shrill sometimes, but this is really important. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person general public comments? Seeing none, I'll ask if we have any general public comments online.
We do not have any hands raised online.
Okay.
But we did receive one additional written comment, and that went out to the board. It was from Hayden Miller regarding Beeline service in Windsor.
Yes, thank you. I think all of my colleagues and I have received that public comment today, so thank you for that reminder. So with that, we will close our general public comment, and I'll move right back to the dais to entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
Erwin moves. Well, second.
All right. I have a motion by Director Early, a second by Director Warren. Any other comments or questions on the consent calendar? All right. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Nice. Motion carries 5-0. Thank you. Okay. We are now on to agenda item number 5, is hold continued public hearing on our revised...
Record minutes? Would you approve the minutes there?
Yeah, that will be consent calendar.
I have a public comment on the minute. If you can open it up, it will face you back.
Yes, that's usually general public comment, but if you... Brian's on the consent calendar or not on the agenda, but...
Thank you. Last meeting, you had a very robust discussion about the budget. And I think that was part catalyzed, not just about the West Sacramento, but about the lack of ridership statistics. and how we just even brought that in a future budget. And I think I'm the one that catalyzed that observation. And the public minutes don't reflect that at all. Don't reflect my contributions at all. Don't reflect what I say and all the substance of it. And you look at it. And also, documents that I submit are not in the minutes. As part of the public record is the public record, not just what the public says, but it's a level that everybody's got access. There was a letter handed in this other, a letter, an input on the B-line that was not made available to the public. Under the Brown Act law, all things given to the board within 72 hours must be made immediately available to the public. I don't want to be a legal stickler, but I think when people make comments, it's respectful to them that it's included in the minutes, and the documents they submit be included in the minutes in a public way. And this, you guys, the board used to do this in the Cherry Bassett era. Because I have never, because I look back in March of 2021 when you guys got through the funding of the IA, my public comments on the written comments are in that minute of that meeting.
So I would like to put this in. 1 minute extra time.
Great, thank you, Alan.
I would appreciate if you include that in the minutes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, so now we will move on to agenda item number 5, which is hold continued public hearing on our revised preliminary draft budget for fiscal year 24-25 and approved resolution 2024-12 adopting the budget for our fiscal year 24-25. And I will turn it over to Chad. Welcome.
Good evening, board members, members of the public, and our friends. Okay, so we are here again to discuss the fiscal year 24-25 proposed final budget. We came to the board in May to have the initial discussion, returned in June with eliminating restoration of West Sacramento about 40 and 240, and at the board's direction, we reinstated the restoration of those two routes in this version that you are presenting today. At that June meeting, the board adopted or approved the preliminary budget until we return in July. So we're all here today to discuss just the changes that we made since the June meeting and then to answer any additional questions that you might have. So I just have a brief PowerPoint slide to guide us through what the changes are. You have additional detail within the staff report, and then you have a packet of the slides itself.
Horrible problem to have.
All right, so this first slide here shows the revised budget and the changes from the June preliminary budget to July. For the administrative operating expenses, there was no change there. The fixed route operating expenses, that's where we had most of our discussion at the June meeting, which was pretty much around Route 240 and 40 itself. So as you can see, we restored those routes, having the increase at about $336,000. For our microtransit operating expenses, reviewing the budget, we review, you know, get another chance to look at everything, get another chance to review our tables, revisit the allocations, budgets are estimates, so anytime we get additional time, you know, we're going to review more things and massage more things, and as we get more actual, then, you know, projections get a little more fine-tuned. So with the microtransit operating expenses, you did revisit all the service hours for Woodland, Winters, and Rex Landing, and determined that additional hours were needed in Woodland. So that change that you see of $52,000 was an adjustment in estimate, which was a result of adding about 800 additional service hours to the microtransit in Woodland. And then for paratransit, again, we revisited a few other things, made a few change in estimates there. So you see a little credit, a little decrease there of about $7,000. Overall, our budget changed from June to July was $381,000, which will be funded because the fixed route operating expenses were for the West Sacramento routes. They will be funded with the Sacramento 5307 UDA funds. And then for the microtransit, additional 800 hours, that will be funded with the at PA 5307 with Woodland Trust.
Thank you, Chair.
Just for the comment?
In the context of the budget, I think it was not otherwise agendized.
a writer has told us that they felt a fixed route service at the commissioners is more reliable and easier to use than our feline has proven to be. Commissioners, I'd be interested to know if there's a staff opinion on that.
So that has come up, and that is something that with our new short-range transit plan, which is currently under development, we are looking at where microtransit is working, where fixed route is working, and if we have the right mix of fixed route and microtransit in the right places. So that is one of the items that we're looking at in our short-range transit plan. I will say we're very aware of the challenges that the microtransit has in winters, and it's part of the reason we talked about adding a second vehicle to that area. That is something we can do fairly quickly. We have the vehicles, and we would not need to go through another public process to simply add an additional vehicle. So there would be some amount of public process. But so that is our proposal for this year. If the short-range transit plan comes back and says, actually, we think that, you know, fixed route works better in winters and we should eliminate microtransit or we need a combination of the two, I think that's when we would bring that to the board for your attention and discussion at that time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you,
Betsy. All right, so I'm going to go through each of the slides. I'll go through them, and if you guys want to ask questions of any, you're welcome to do that. You're welcome to answer questions of each slide.
Sure, thank you.
All right, Norma, next slide, please. So I provide a slide for the individual changes, although I just talked about them. This is more for transparency for anyone who just took hold of our PowerPoint slides and wants to know a little bit more. So might be a little repetitive, but here are the fixed route operating expense change. As we mentioned in the previous slide, the change is an increase of $336,000. The increases were due to the restoration of a few trips for Route 40 in the early morning and evening, and then for Route 240, restore additional weekday trips. Next slide, please. And then for microtransit, this was our change in estimate and the service hours. We are planning for fiscal year 24-25. So as a result, we increased the service hours of about 800 hours, which resulted in the $52,000 increase. And as I mentioned earlier, that will be funded with FTA 5307 Woodland. Next slide, please. Paratransit, this was just a slight change in cost estimate with a slight decrease of $7,000. Next slide. And then in your packet, the actual staff report, you have a snapshot of the five-year outlook. And then in the slides, you'll see a more condensed table of the five-year outlook. I didn't think that we needed to repeat each one of them. I did a little something different in this, where this one is the condensed version where you're not seeing all the detail of the different funding sources. You'll see that in the second line where it says total base revenue. So I didn't change any of the funding sources within the total base revenue section because I wanted you to be able to see what the impact was when we restored Route 40 and 240 and the additional hours in microtransit. So this appears as though, I forgot I gave you the previous one. So this is the previous one showing no deficit in the 24-25. And then you see the additional amount in the 24-25-26. The next slide is the one that we update. Next slide, please, Jonas. This is today's update, the condensed version. So what you're seeing here, this is where I did a little bit something different, and it was just more for discussion and just to kind of follow along, in a more summarized version. So in the total base revenues, as I was mentioning earlier, it's that second orange line. In the budget book itself and in the staff report, you'll see the full table here. You're just seeing the total base revenue. That's the one that I kept the same as the previous version in June because I wanted you to see the difference. So this is where you're seeing the restoration of 40 and 240 and the increase in microtransit showing the base funding excess deficit of $367,911. I will let you know that is not a deficit. This is just for illustrative purposes to show you what the impact was in restoring those routes and increasing the microtransit for Woodland. This as I mentioned in the few slides before, those changes will be funded with FTA 5307 money. So in the adopted final budget, you will see that deficit go to zero because we need to have a balanced budget. And as you can see, the two aren't balanced. You have this deficit in the table. So I wanted to just point that out. I hope I didn't confuse anyone.
It's balanced budget we're adopting.
Yes, you are adopting a balanced budget here. If you look at the first orange line, 21604911, and then right below it is 21237000. That doesn't show a balanced budget because I left that 367911 there so that you have something to compare to. And I did the same for 2526. And then for the increases, that's where you're seeing where we will find the additional costs for 4240 and micro transit is the use of additional formula funds, 5307 formula funds. And that's the only update. That's the last update.
Thank you, Chad. Do we have any clarifying questions for Chad before we open up all the comments?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Okay. One quick question.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for the updates. Appreciate those. I just one quick question on the notes, the footnotes, and it has to do with the increased formula funding. And it talks about the sort of pending negotiations between YTD and Unitrans. Potential additional usage of the city of Davis UZF, but I know that's not,
we talked about this with last meeting as well, sort of trying to work with Unitrans to formalize the model to sort of standing just informal agreement. I'm hoping that there's an ability, it will be happening, obviously, forward in terms of how those negotiations are going. And I think it's obviously pretty important that we formalize the agreement, first of all, but also I think probably in that nature that we partially fill that sort of funding gap with the increased usage of the Davis UDA funds to sort of make sure that we're gone for that.
We are in discussion with Unitrans. We started talking with them early June about it. So we're hopeful to have more discussions sooner than later.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Burns. Okay, so now we will go ahead and open public comment for agenda item number 5, and we'll welcome our first public commenter.
Well, thank you, Michael Barnbaum of Sacramento, and wanted to testify on item number 5. Very well written and presented item. Read through it thoroughly in preparation for tonight's meeting. Some points I'd like to make, which I think could even build upon what has been written in the report and presented tonight, and that folks work collaboratively among stakeholders, staff, and your board to 4 things. Implement the service expansion of up to 16 additional daily trips on routes 42A, 42B, that would truly reshape the timetable of this particular service to every 30 minutes from the start of the service day to the conclusion of the service day by assisting all involved with overcoming challenges to vehicle operator recruitment retention while simultaneously maintaining the aging fleet and assisting the district in successfully applying and obtaining grant funding for brand new revenue service vehicles. Number 2, continuously participate and partner with the district in developing a final short-range transit plan that, among other initiatives, implements the goal mentioned in item number 1, previously read into the record from this particular mobile device. Number 3, implement per a directive of the Chief Executive Officer the revisiting of the Route 42A-42B schedule and route alignment to serve the new downtown Woodland Transit Center, while also minimizing delays and detours in downtown Sacramento due to special events. And 4th and final point, implement via a cost-sharing agreement amongst regional businesses, organizations, and other transit operators in the 7-county region, so the SACOG region plus San Joaquin County. Between March 16th and October 15th of each calendar year over the next three calendar years, a Sacramento ballpark shuttle operating once every 10 minutes between the Sacramento Valley Amtrak station in downtown Sacramento and the West Sacramento Transit Center that would critically stop on the Tower Bridge Gateway to access ball games of the Sacramento Athletics, Sacramento Rivercats, and other events at Sutter Health Park, again between March 16th and October 15th of 2025 through 2027. This special service would be subject to extension beyond 2027.
Seconds remaining.
Yes, and this is my concluding comment or so. This special service would be subject to extension beyond 2027 in collaboration with the River City Stadium Financing Authority, originally spearheaded in alphabetical order by Christopher Cabaldon, Roger Dickinson, and Mike McGowan. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Any questions?
You working? Thank you.
Yeah. I would like to note that it sounds like Tom Scholars was also there.
Thank you. Okay.
It's 4 of 18.
Okay. So do we have any other in-person public comments? Welcome.
Those are definitely some living legends in the political being. Thank you.
Good evening, Alan. First, I'm going to the airport tonight. All of you are back there. From here, I took the bus here. I tried to, at least. I was at the bus stop. I Googled it. I kind of need to take the bus to get here for the 6 o'clock meeting. It's at 4:57 at the Save Mars Station, 4:50 at UC. This is peak travel time. So I got there, they gave me down. I had to call Autumn. We had a discussion about resolving this cooperative contract. And she said, have you tried our new, cool, real-time application app? I said, no, I hadn't. I'm just struggling with this automatic ticket. So I had some expenses. I struggled through it, and I checked it out. And the 4:57 bus doesn't exist. So I had to take a lift up here. 5 o'clock bus out of Davis to Woodland. That's the peak travel time. And that bus stop is unshaded. Trees, all that other stuff. It doesn't taste wet. It was very comfortable. So my plea is that I'm going to add my voice to listen to the Citizens Advisory Committee who wanted to have more 42 buses. Sir, sure. But this is the yellow goal, but this is the core of our region. And we need to have more 42 bus service. I know it's not on the agenda, but it has to be a priority. It's very important. These are the long-distance travels. These are the big BMT reductions. This is really important. So please, for next year, put it in there. And also, we talked last time about putting some of the safety subject, the non-financial stuff in the budget. We should be able to do that as soon as possible. In fact, if we don't have good ridership numbers, it's shocking. How can you do a short race transfer without ridership? You know how many customers there are. How can you design your service? So that's the other thing. But thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all your hard work on the board.
Thank you, Al. Do we have any more in-person public comment? Okay. Do we have any online public comment?
We do not have any hands raised online.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, we will close public comment on agenda item number 5, and I'll bring it back to the dais to my colleagues for question, comments, or motions.
Hey, question. So I'm looking at our packet on, looks like maybe page 17, and just wanting to make sure I understand the working. So for the 5307 UGA Sacramento dollars, we slowly see it increasing year over year. In 2025-26, it pops up to $3 million. And I do want to just make sure I understand if that, accounting for kind of like what we see here. I think it's sub the put heading number 6. But thank you. Because the 1.2 million in accounting for the fact that you're going to try to grab back some of those funds for the previous year. Is that what that 3 million is accounting for?
Yes. So what we knew at the time when we came in June and we built out the 5-year outlook, that was when you know, we've been doing a lot of work since I got here to really identify our awards from the previous year and reconcile what we have currently. So we're still in the process of that. So in June, that is what we knew, is that there were funding for the 5307 Woodland UVA and the Sacramento 5307 UVA in addition to some 5311 money, in addition to discretionary funds as well, that were not utilized in the past couple of years. So that was an estimate of what we know we have today and what we determined we did not program for two fiscal years, which was for 22 and 23. So that assumption in that $3 million is using current allocations for each of those fiscal years in addition to spending down any of the previously unprogrammed funds.
So that's really helpful. I have two questions. So then when we go to 26, 27, it stays at $3 million for multiple years. And so I was trying to keep up with, is the assumption that you, because something you only, you didn't bill for like two fiscal years, that all of that is going to exist, like $3 million is going to be available? Because the note in my head, that math doesn't matter.
You know, I get it. And so that's all we can come up with at this time with what we know today. It could be, you know, it could be, a, you know, slight overestimate, but that is what I know today. That's what I felt comfortable with including in a five-year outlook. So, you know, one of our plans, as we discussed at the June meeting, was to establish some sort of, like, workshop with all of you to discuss funding in more detail, you know, and kind of share with you the findings as we discover them.
That's great, and that's helpful. So then just building on that, when I look at, again, 26, 27, and I go to the potential funding solutions, increased use of formula funding, footnote 10, you have about 1.9, I'm just going to round up for 2 million, just for ease. And it looks like what you're also counting there is that UVA. And so I'm trying to figure out, have we doubled, actually probably triple counted at this point, in that $2 million, because you have already the account of $4 and the $3 million on the UVA Sacramento line that we're saying, again, we're capturing. And then you also are accounting for basically $2 million in that fund. I appreciate that. I don't think all that money exists. Just based on what you're telling me.
Right.
Right? Because it was 2 years of not grabbing those dollars. That's 1.2 million, 1.2 million, right? So you bring that forward. I'm going to get an easy number, round it to 1.5,
yeah.
Right? You've got 3 million previous, and then you're going to get 1.2 million, 1.2.
So when we're awarded the 5307 funds, we have about 4 to 5 years to spend.
Okay.
And so the amounts that I brought to the board in June was what we, like, fresh off of discussion, found out that specifically for 22 and 23, we had not programmed any of those dollars.
Right.
So I don't know what exists for 2020, for 2024 and what we plan for that, and then anything for 2025. I also don't know if we have any discretionary funds. You know, that's what we're working on right now. I understand with the out years, you know, that's where we parked our estimates, you know, with that funding, not knowing as much as, you know, we do with the discoveries that we made in June, alerted us to, like, okay, there, you know, there is potential for, you know, lasting funds, not just for 5307. The conservative approach in our five-year outlook, we could have spread out to other areas as we did in last year's five-year outlook, but we just, you know, wanted to really simplify, you know, the five-year outlook in the information that we knew. We can go kind of dime for dime with the other funding sources that are available to us, but just for ease of review and what we were comfortable estimating based on the information that we found out in June, you know, I would say that, you know, that's our best estimate.
If I may jump in too, I just want to remind that there are two SAF UGA process funding. There's that we get by formula, and then there's also some of the discretionary, meaning we compete with other transit agencies in the Sacramento region for. And so, Chad can correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that what we had under potential funding solutions, that footnote 10, that's discretionary SAF UGA funding, whereas what we had in the up above is the formula funding that we are guaranteed.
So it's a combination, and that's what we're We're working on this right
now. Okay. I think that's helpful. It sounds like there is more to come.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to diving into that. I will make a preemptive motion to move this forward, but I know that you might have some more comments.
I mean, that would be back under motion. I have funding. All right, we have a motion by Director Hurley, the second by Director Scholars. Any of my colleagues have questions?
Raising that issue, Director Hurley, I mean, that begs to also why I raised the issue about the sort of formalizing the agreement with Unitrans, and because it also includes the hypothetical decrease in those dollars as well. And so, yeah, trying to look at for the variety of sources that might exist. So, yeah, absolutely appreciate, thinking very similarly about sort of the approach. And I think also, you know, I think partly the process, it is definitely the staff component, but I think for those colleagues that serve on the SACON board, which a number here do, it's important to like sort of be trying to bird dog, I think, this issue at that board. So when there is sort of discretionary dollars being discussed and sort of giving up of those dollars, then making sure that YPD gets its fair share of those dollars. And, you know, everyone's mostly collaborative, but, you know, you've got to, like, bring the game, obviously, and everyone at this board always does. So I appreciate that folks consider. I think that's a big, you know, big part of the process as well.
It might be extending their particular 7 to this district and an immediate U turn back to Unitrans, so that it looks fairly similar across the board in terms of overall putting allocated funds into your other passive options in our jurisdictions. Because it's strange, there's $3,150,000. It would just be kind of a collegial thing. Thank you.
I appreciate your point. That's exactly why the formalizing of an MOU, not just a handshake agreement, as has been the case the last 30-ish years, but is important.
For us, it's now you see it, now you don't. But at the same point, you're showing it's important to be able to do it.
Thank you. Any other comments, my colleagues?
So just the last question, and maybe at the very end of the meeting when we talk about the speaker agenda items, I would like to, as soon as possible, start to talk about these numbers, how they're calculated our budget. I know that we have an intention to do that, but an intention without a timeline is just dreams, hopes, and aspirations. So it would be great to put that on for speaker agenda items.
Absolutely, yeah, and thank you for bringing that back up again. Look forward to doing that. I know that's something once we kind of get over what we're looking at in tonight's meeting with the IA project and with our budget, that there may be, hopefully, we have a little bit of time to tackle some of these other issues that I've been brought up. So I just want to say thank you to our team. Thank you, Travis. I know this has not been easy. Thank you, my colleagues, for your thoroughness in this. It's been 3 months, right? It's been 3 meetings that we've taken this budget under consideration and moved and changed, and some questions you come back each time with thorough answers. We got us to a place tonight where we seem like are unanimous in putting this forward. So thank you and your team and Autumn for your leadership and even getting us here in this evening. So with that, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Agenda item number 6. Approved resolution 2024-13. Accepting the Yolo 80 Managed Lane final environmental impact report, including findings of fact and statement of overriding considerations. And I'm going to turn to Autumn.
While we're doing a quick personnel change, what do I got to do to get you guys to take some cupcakes? I'm not taking them all home. And that is an audience. So please get a cupcake. Now, get the job. I will pass up. Okay,
we have to tell them. Right, we'll do a 5-minute recess while we do a cupcake. Okay.
Yeah.
At this time, the draft EIR had already been released and the public comments had been closed. So at that time, Caltrans was in the process of formulating responses to EIR comments that they received. In March, Cardiff submitted the towing application to the CTC to be given authority by the CTC for becoming a towing authority. And then in late April, as I mentioned earlier, EIR was filed, certified. CTC then later that month approved towing authority to CARTA and awarded the CSEP funding award, which closed the phase one project financial gap. So then that brings us to today, where two of your key actions here are taking action of the responsible agency on the final environmental impact report, as well as what we're calling the capital, requesting your approval to execute a capital project transfer expenditure contract, which is a very fancy way of saying funding agreement to transfer the funding over to Caltrans. Next slide. I alluded to some of our responsibilities as a responsible agency, so this slide just sort of defines those a little bit more clearly. Caltrans is the lead agency. We scoped the project for environmental purposes. They issued a notice of preparation. They conduct all the analysis on the project, and they issue draft EIR, respond to comments, and then ultimately certify it. So they have the primary role as a lead agency in CEQA. YOLO-TD does have a role as well, because we're considered a responsible agency. And that's because we do have some discretionary authority over the project by virtue of being the recipients of the $85.9 million info award. So that's why we're taking this action tonight. And so the role that you have is to take action that if you consider the EIR that Caltrans has prepared in your actions this evening. Next slide, please. Oh, already there. So I won't go into too much detail. I think I've already covered a lot of the history as well. But in December, we did discuss the draft EIR. Some of the outcomes of that were that most of the findings in the draft EIR were either less than significant or less than significant with mitigation, with the exception of transportation and DMT. And this is new information. You guys are all aware of that. But just sort of summarizing that for you, that DMT mitigation plan was also introduced at that meeting. So there was conversation and discussion amongst the board and staff and Caltrans related to DMT mitigation. Also, there's questions and response related to equity and JC representation, because part hadn't formed yet. So that was the nature of that conversation back in December. So the final EIR, which was filed in April, as I just mentioned, didn't have any substantive changes in those areas. There were some refinements to the VMC mitigation plan, but that was largely the extent of it. Also noteworthy, in May 24, there were two lawsuits that were filed against the project, one by Environmental Council of Sacramento, one by Sierra Club. So those are proceeding along their track, and we'll see how those play out. And the last action here related to the EIR is the action you're going to take in this meeting. Next slide, please. Okay, so the actual actions that you're taking relate to two documents. One is called the findings of fact, the other is statement of overriding considerations. For those who might not be as familiar with these CEQA terms, findings of fact simply summarize the extent of the environmental impacts and identifies mitigation measures. And those findings of facts are included as an attachment to the resolution that you have. Again, the significant finding here is mostly related to DMT, and the meaning of your action today is that you consider these findings of facts in your acceptance of the final EIR. And then accompanying the findings of facts is also called a statement of overriding considerations. This basically acknowledges that there are benefits of the project that outweigh the environmental impact, and that you balance those against each other and are choosing to support the project as a result. Okay, so I think we can go to the next slide. That concludes our presentation. Again, we have the staff recommendation in front of you, but I recognize there's probably questions and conversation that you'd like to have. And of course, we have our special counsel, which is Project Kirk Trosten, with us, who's extremely well versed in these areas and can answer some of the more detailed legal questions if you have an issue.
Thank you, Brian. Do any of my colleagues have any clarifying questions for Brian or our staff team before we go to public comment? Okay, so let's open up public comment for agenda item number 6, and we will welcome our first public comment member.
Alan British, this is a massive document, a lot of work. I hope you figured out how to download the 484 megabytes of this project to map it out. It's quite interesting. I'm concerned that, I know you have to approve this as sort of pass the money on, but I'm concerned that they say back in December when you had a chance to modify it, you didn't dig in at all. The tape shows you only spent 16 and a half minutes reviewing the project and deciding on the alternative for the draft, which we know has problems with the maintenance issues and modifiers. That's kind of a concern. And I'll give an example of what some of the things are made. On page 58 of your staff document, it talks about energy consumption in the project. And it says the energy increase in energy consumption is only short-term due to construction. Now, we know that the VMT is going to increase on this project. So there's more cars, so energy should increase. But the EIR, the finding says on 58, says that the energy will only be a short-term increase. That's reasonable. I also will pass off here the mitigation plan. That talks about microtransit. That microtransit can reduce VMT. That is not founded in the CAPTOA document. And basically, you're only expecting to spend 24 cents passenger mile. It costs $8 a mile to run microtransit per passenger or more. You can only deal maybe, claim maybe 3 or 4% of the VMT reduction on that price. This document is not going to stand at the court. It's going to be an embarrassment. This looks like, the greenhouse gas is terrible, but it's a small part of what's going to happen during the world. But the real cost of this project for Yolo Town, the real cost, is the lack of trust, because this document is not valid. It is not, you can see it. Even a layman like me can read it, much less the UC Davis. You really undermine the trust in our government system, this process. This is a disappointment. So I know you're going to prove this thing, and when someone dies, no one looks at the safety on the project. We're eliminating the shoulder lanes. And there's a UC Davis study that says basically you cut the shoulder lanes from 12 feet to 2. You increase the collision rate by 3 to 4%. That is not discussed, even though it was commented on. So this is a real disappointment. So I know there's lots of work here. Doing the thing right is fine, but doing the right thing is the real issue here. I don't think you've done the right thing here. So I'm disappointed. And our community is in 10 seconds to be involved. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for your hard work. I'm sorry this is ad hoc.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comments for agenda item number 6? Okay. Do we have any online public comments?
We do not have any hands raised at this time.
Okay. Thank you. So with that, we will close public comment on agenda item number 6. Now we'll bring it back to the dais, to my colleagues for questions, comments. We'd like to jump in and start. Sure.
Thank you. I'll just be real brief, and I want to express appreciation to staff for simplifying the information, providing it clearly, but then also providing the links to the final EIR, the findings of fact, the statement of a variety of considerations, as well as all of the information in the public art building. We can access and we really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Other colleagues, questions, comments? No one else? Sure, go on.
Yeah, I'd also like to thank staff and for making it accessible. It's a lot of information. I'd like to make a motion to
to adopt, item 6, as stated in the staff report, but I'd like to approve resolution 2024-13, accepting the Yolo 80 Managed Lanes Final Environmental Impact Report, including findings of facts and statements overriding considerations. Thank you.
And having a second to item. Any other motion by Director Warren, the second by Director Ferris. Any other comments from my colleagues before we vote? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? All right, motion carries 5-0. Thank you. It looks like Brian's going to be in the seat for the next couple of years. Now we'll move to agenda item number 7. Approved resolution 2024-14, authorizing executive director to execute a capital project transfer and expenditure contract with Caltrans for $85.9 million for design and construction of the Yolo 80 Managed Lanes project. Brian?
Great, thank you. That intro allowed me to catch up to you guys at the afternoon.
Yeah,
so this item relates to what we're calling the fund transfer agreement. Which obviously this more complex title. We can go to the next slide. In order to really understand the context of the action that you're being asked to take, it's good to look at the costs and the revenue, or the cost and the funding sources for this project. And this is where we're sort of reverting back to the phase one aspect of the project, which is the interior segment of the project area. So we have this phase one total project cost of almost $200 million. And then you can see in the table, in the middle of the page, where our funding sources are. And our focus here, can you click one time, please, Mona? Is the INFRA grant. And so you can see there's a large portion of the project funding, but it's not the majority of the project funding. That probably belongs to the state TSEP grant, which was just awarded back in May. So that's the $86 million that you will be taking action on. Next slide, please.
Remind me where the $7.5 million came from.
That was, actually, I think the Gertesh can probably answer this question better than I can, but I'll try to, let me know if I hit this wrong. These were sort of pre-construction related costs that they've incurred, and it's independent of the $2 million that we have for touring here.
So the Caltrans front of this money, what you're saying?
I think they were.
I know
you got
safeguard up here too, but it was.
Yeah. 8 million
plus safeguard.
Thank you
very much, safeguard.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's the 1.6 for clarity, only because you took safeguard on the other federal funding safeguard line. So it's the 1.56 with safeguard and then the other funding was also safeguard. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so we can move on to the, next slide, which you've done. Thank you. So Caltrans and ULSTD have distinct roles in the project. They're primarily responsible for project design and delivery and environmental as well. And our role has generally been working on the outreach and touring advanced planning side. And that's sort of, it kind of oversimplifies it, but that's roughly how the main responsibilities are organized. If you want to click once, please, Mona. So what we're focusing on here with this action is $85.9 million, is to enable Caltrans to invoice against design costs and construction costs that are related to the capital project. This funding is not used for things like DMT mitigation or other purposes. This is strictly transferring funding from us for design and construction. Next slide, please. Okay, so the mechanism for doing this is obviously you need to have some sort of agreement. We can't hold on to the money forever, but we don't design and construct projects, so that's what Caltrans' role has always been in this project. And so we knew this day was going to come, the day is here now, today. And so that's what this agreement does. It hands over the project essentially to them. And it's your final discretionary action prior to construction starting in fall of this year. But, there was, a lot of coordination with Caltrans staff on, what the right, mechanism should look like, what's the right agreement, template we should be using. So we landed on capital project transfer and expenditure contract. And there were some things that were important to us that we wanted to make sure were reflected in this agreement, such as, the agreement would prohibit any changes to the project without, your TU's consent. And also, the project description is tied to the TSEP funding that they have as well. So, there isn't really, a whole lot of maneuvering room, for the project, description or for the project to be delivered any differently than what we've been discussing this entire time. So, the agreement reflects that. From cost overrun standpoint, that's going to, we'll need to be a partnership with that in the event that occurs, but it doesn't place that liability on the OLCD. And also, the agreement does, indemnify the OLCD against any claims made against Caltrans. And if you want to, thank, Caltrans and district for staff for coming for the, for the simple, and effective, fund transfer agreement this, the Intel needs. So, next slide, please. And so that brings us back around to the recommendation. And again, happy to answer any questions or participate in the discussion.
Great. Thank you, Brian. I'll turn to Dr. Sullivan.
Thank you. Well, one of the concerns expressed by members of the public is our potential continuing liability for EMT mitigation and the like. The claim is made that the funding will generate 50% of the cost, whatever. Doesn't the whole harmless cost in our agreement protect us from any kind of future financial obligations for BFT mitigation?
So it would, but perhaps more importantly, the legal obligation to pay for BMT mitigation when it's adopted in an environmental document by a lead agency, the implementing agency and the lead agency have the legal liability and responsibility for doing that. And addressing the other question that was raised, we don't need an agreement with Caltrans for them to have that obligation. It exists under the Public Resources Code under CEQA. It's been confirmed by case law, but not just this agency, but any person could sue by writ of mandate to enforce the mitigation obligations if Caltrans were not to follow through and adopt and implement those mitigation measures. And there's nothing that would provide for liability for this district as a result of that as a responsible agency. Keep in mind that the California Transportation Commission took the same action that you're taking tonight, approving as a responsible agency the environmental document, making an overriding consideration, and the CCC also bears no future obligation for mitigation responsibilities in connection with the project.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Warren.
It's just going to add to Tom's question. In the packet, it says that the key provision is that it also indemnifies the OLCD PD against claims made against Caltrans. Do you just want to add anything on that?
Only to say that we're very satisfied that this agreement does absolutely what it needs to do, which is protect this agency from future financial or legal responsibility, but ensures that the project that this board has adopted and approved is the project that will be built by Caltrans under any circumstances. And if our leader wants to change it, they have to come back and get our approval first before they do that.
Okay.
So we have the protections we need, but we don't have the liability associated with the project.
A quick follow-up. How in the weeds does that go with any kind of, what triggers the change that would need to come here? At what level is this a trigger?
So that's a good question. Brian and I actually talk a lot about that. How do we lock in the project as we understand it? And the best document that has the most detail is the application that we made to the California Transportation Commission to fund the project and to obtain tolling authority. It's a very precise definition of the project, and that becomes the touchstone for any changes that might be made in the future.
Thank you. Any other clarifying questions from colleagues before we open public comment? Okay. So with that, we will open public comment on agenda item number 7, and welcome our first public comment.
I have 484 megabytes on my
So we've reached a milestone here. I thought I would share with you the press release. We got this money back in 2021. It quotes Lucas and John Saylor for his share.
Carol, can I kind of have any signs for the board still talking?
I'm just trying to pass this around, sir.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much. I thought I would share with you the press release from 2021 when we got this money and the promises, representations of the public that were made about what this project would do. It calls out and says two places that will reduce greenhouse gases and improve the environment. I know the contract here will basically release you from financial liability, but will it release you from political liability for the representation? Because we know it doesn't reduce greenhouse gas. But the moral responsibility by climate change. And in terms of the project, let me call out on page 69 what was in represented. In this, it's a very short concept here, but it was represented that the project describes the project in detail, including the location, lane type, and project activities. It's only two sentences. And the mitigation measures for which the funds can be used. Mitigation is not mentioned even once in this contract. This is kind of open. The staff report kind of oversells what's in this contract. Kirk has basically assured me this is sufficient to protect the agency from financial liabilities, but I think we should be clear about what it really does. It does very little in relying on other stuff, and I assume Kirk is right. If not, that'll be ironed out in court. Caltrans is... I'm just quite concerned that this project, again, you're moving ahead on a project where you really are not accomplishing the pride. Your values were about an environment, and this project doesn't accomplish that. It speeds traffic short-term. It's a short-term fix. It allows the richest to opt out with the managed lanes or the Tahoe traffic with three to ride in the free lane. So I don't think it accomplishes what we wanted to do. The public traffic will return. You only spent 4 minutes discussing the EIR, then talking about 16 and a half minutes back in December. Have you really done your due diligence? This is the accountability part of the whole of this stuff, and I'm just kind of disappointed about the lack of thoroughness here. But thank you.
Thank you, Noel. Any other in person public comment for agenda item number 7? Do we have any hand raised online?
We do not have any hands raised online.
Okay, thank you. So I'll bring it back to the dais for the conversation and further questions.
First, I'd like to move the item. Last question. A couple quick comments. First, I really appreciate the highlighting of the press release, actually, because I was going to do that myself this evening. I just want to take a moment, and I'll comment also on the news today that our former congressman, current congressman from the 8th District, Congressman John Guerin, that he was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, relatively rare type of blood cancer, and so he's undergoing treatment. That is sort of in the, very, very media today. I just want to thank him. It was 3 years ago, basically, that the advocacy work that he engaged with for this entire region resulted in this $86 million infra grant. To this agency, soon to be to another sister agency. I'm really grateful for all the advocacy work that John Garamendi has done for this entire region for over 40 years, representing this area quite well. So just wanted to express our best wishes, my best wishes, probably our best wishes, to Congressman Garamendi, Patty, and the whole family. And I was going to raise this exact press release because it was just 3 years ago, a week ago that this happened. So I think we've seen I think a very good partnership with Caltrans. At the time when this was first awarded the infra grant, I was still a member of the SAFON board. No longer am, obviously, but a member of the folks on this board still are and are representing our region quite well. Think about all the steps that have taken place over the intervening 3 years, including, of course, the formation of CARTA, the Regional Solar Authority, but many other, I think, positive steps as well, and including that sort of close relationship with the partner agency of Caltrans. I feel very comfortable in the transfer and expenditure contract with Caltrans. I feel like there are enough of surety and protections built in as well, and appreciate the work of the special counsel on that. And those are my comments. Appreciate your consideration of the motion.
Thank you, Dr. Burris. Turn to any my other colleagues have some ideas or comments. So I'll just kind of close up with a few words and thank you to our staff team, to Kirk and all your work on this, and thank you for your comments, Director Ferrick on this. And I know, you know, this has been a project that's been in the making for a number of years, for 3 years, and they quantifying it into just two meetings as being the body of work that we have done considering this project is not an accurate reflection of the work that this board and our staff has done to try and look at what this project is. No project that comes forward, whether it's something like this or at the city or land use, is going to be perfect. And I step back as a policymaker and look at, right, overriding considerations, concerns, especially in the city which I represent, in the district I represent, which oftentimes sees the direct impact of the congestion on I-80 that backs up into South Davis, can cause a lot of safety concerns in that community, that this is to help be a solution to that problem. I have said over and over again that I do not think that doing nothing is an option. And what's before us is either we leave it the way it is and hope and pray that somehow, some way, we're going to get magical dollars to get rail service or to get Amtrak extensions or to get a high-speed train that's going to take us up and down this corridor, isn't the reality that's in space. So when I step back and look at this, this has been approved by unanimously, I believe, by this board in particular, by a board previous to us, who aren't sitting up here. This was the State College Board, and our whole metropolitan region was approved unanimously. It went to CEC and was approved unanimously. And then State College held a meeting with the different interjurisdictional groups, EPA, CARB, FHWA, and it came back that this project did not have a determination that it was not a project of air quality concern. It was in our staff report, and that came from CARB, from the California EPA, and other folks that were in that meeting held by State College. So I understand the concerns of folks that are here this evening. I understand the concerns of folks who are not here this evening, who have made public comments in previous meetings, who have sent us letters to this board, who have sent us letters or to the city of Davis when we've taken this up at our own city council meetings. At the end of the day, there aren't going to be agenda items that we all always agree on, and I respectfully disagree with the notion that this is going to somehow be detrimental to Yolo County, and I don't see that. And I respect the opinions of the people who are on the other side of this conversation. I truly mean that. And I'm here this evening knowing and happy to move something forward that is us identifying this problem and as policymakers and decision makers and leaders in this county doing something to try to address this issue. So I'm happy to support that here this evening. And if there's no other comments, I will call for a vote.
Well, I'm honored to be on this dais with my colleagues and their words of wisdom. I was chair in 2020 when we were working towards this, and we were awarded in 2021. And I think that there's a multitude of people that are farmers and hard truck driving, car driving workers that are from my community and communities in Solano and other cities that are getting work done, that they might be union workers, they might be service workers, they might be getting medical treatment at UC Davis Medical Center. They're stuck in that causeway, and they really do deserve to get to their families in a timely manner. And they'll never know us, really, but I think that their lives will be better because of this project. So just really grateful that we're really forward to this tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the call? Thank you or comments? Yes. So we have a motion by Director Barrett and a second by Director Lauren. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. Agenda item number 8, right at the back on the hot seat over there. Approved resolution 2024-15, authorizing the executive director to release a request for qualifications on RFQ for consulting services for the YOLO 80 Managed Lane Tolling Advanced Planning Project and terminate agreements with WSC, USA Inc. for Tolling Advanced Planning Consulting Services. With multiple. Brian.
Well, there's always more work to do with YOLO 80 and Managed Lane Project. And you're probably wondering, well, I thought we were already working on tolling advanced planning and thought we already had consultants to do this. So let's talk about the background of this action and or requesting from you, and then proceed from there. So a little bit of background. Back in summer of 22, when there was, you know, really good sense that the project was going to become a toll managed lane project, we did conduct a competitive selection process for consulting assistance on the OAD management, specifically related to tolling, because we knew that we didn't have, you know, the in-staff expertise to, you know, to provide informed recommendations to our board. And after that selection process occurred, we executed an agreement with WSC, who's been providing us with really good services over the past year and a half related to all things tolling and the OAD managed lane. In June of last year, we were awarded that $2 million grant from SACOG that we've been referencing over the past few months, and that was really to help us meet all of the milestones and develop all the work products necessary in order to get from the idea of old man's lanes to actually operating old man's lanes. So a lot of that work that we had scoped for this purpose, some of it's been done, but there's still more work to do. In November 23 of last year was when we actually issued the agreement. So we start working on things like, next slide, please. The concept of operations. That's a completed work product that fed into the tolling authority application, which is also complete, which led to the California Transportation Commission's action this past May to authorize, approve PARSA as a tolling authority. Also governance to tolling the purpose of establishing the JPA and determining what, you know, the correct form of governance should be. That's largely complete as well, although that's an ongoing, body of government that continues to work together. But we think that most of the work that we needed to do in setting that up as far as the complete. Community engagement is something that we consider to be ongoing. But two big ones that we haven't started yet are related to procuring roadside tolling equipment and all the back end staffing, organization, and interfaces between the equipment on the ground and the end user. So there's a whole world in there that you've used fast track and you've gotten a violation notice that you went through that, you used their lanes and you didn't have an account set up and you did a delinquent notice and you have to pay that. But they give you forgiveness if you're a first time offender. So we need to figure out what all that, what the relationships look like, what the work needs to be done in order to successfully stand up the actual, tolling integration system. We also need to do a level 2 traffic and revenue study that will help inform the tolling ordinance that CARTA needs to take action on at a later date related to what will the tolling hours be, what will days of the week will operate, who will get, special, exemptions and so forth. And so then that will help also set the fees for the tolling as well. That's a really important, piece of analysis that needs to be done. We have a level 1 done, and that was good enough for tolling authorities. The level 2 is really needed to refine those assumptions and enable the CARTA board to make, specific action relating to how the toll managed lanes will themselves be managed. Of course, there's an equity framework and program that needs to be started and ultimately completed. So we're working with CARTA on this issue as to what, who has what roles related to equity, the, you know, the sort of regional component to it, and there's also the project level component. So we have this task that still needs to be completed. We've also learned through the CDM, through the VMT mitigation planning process that, you know, with the funding coming into Yolo County as VMT mitigation, that we need to make sure that there's an organization that can actually implement those programs on the scale that the EIR requires. And so we're going to use some of this funding to better understand, is it a nonprofit that should be doing this? Is it ULTE that should be doing this? Is it, you know, third party sort of marketing firm that should be doing this type of work? And who should be, you know, overseeing that work? So that's going to be an important document as well. And of course, we have continued use for legal advisory services as well. So that's what's been done. Go ahead, Kirk.
Didn't mean to point. Sorry,
that's all right. It's a good opportunity for me to say I have not reviewed this item. I've not provided advice on it, and I cannot give you any counsel on it because I anticipate being my participant in a team or teams who will respond to the RFQ. So I am not here in any capacity representing.
You need to step out of the room.
I don't need to step out of the room, but I need to let you know that as a matter of record. So,
and
thanks
for pointing out you were
headache. Right, that's the landscape under which we are, you know, or the context under which this item is being brought to you. And so, getting to the question of why do we need to rebid? Well, back in, what was it? Like I said, in August of 22, we did competitively bid, but there are specific requirements for selecting consultants if you're using federal funds, and it wasn't compliant to that. And so, when we were trying to submit invoices for some of the costs that we've incurred, they weren't willing to process them, and then we sort of discovered that, oh, you know, we need to go out and we need to rebid this work.
Brian, could you share what was the compliance?
The process that we used to select our consultants.
I'm just asking specificity. I'm just curious.
So the key issue here was primarily revolves around, so they have a checklist. You have to comply with the checklist that they have. And then, but most of it focuses on disadvantaged business enterprises as being, you know, part of, you know, your consulting team, and then having the opportunity to participate on the consulting team and participate on some of the work in the project.
Got it. Okay. So, just to summarize it, the DEI component, is that what it was?
CDE.
Thank you.
It's also worth noting that this is a highly specialized area of work, that there's only a handful of firms that can actually do this type of work, but we have sort of re-scoped the project, and we do have a DEE goal for moving forward, and think that we can be compliant with the requirements.
Okay.
And of course, we've exhausted all our other options. We've talked to Caltrans, we've talked to SACOG. Is there anything that will allow us to continue moving forward? But there just simply isn't. We need to go out and rebid, which is fine. But once we learned this, we did issue a stop work order to WSP. And so none of that work, the roadside toll system procurement and the integration, that work should be occurring now, but it's not. We'll probably be able to catch up, but that's not happening in either the level 2 traffic study. So that's the tangible impact that's occurring right now. We did incur about $240,000 in expenses that were grant eligible. Caltrans is considering those to be our local cash match,
mm-hmm.
and will allow us to reimburse in the future at 100% of our incurred costs as a result of that. So the next slide sort of will help visualize a little bit. If you go down to just below row 10, right, and you go to staff time and cash net, that's sort of the difference between what we've incurred directly in local cash and what we think we can recover by the end of this process, which is expected to to continue up until and through the opening of the Told Man's Range. And next slide, please. So moving forward, we will, once, if we are fortunate to get your approval, we will proceed with a federally compliant consultant procurement process, and we think we'll be able to bring this back in September or October for your action, which includes picking back up the work that we had stopped. Also know that CARTA and SACOG are conducting a regional toll program work plan, so they're doing somewhat complementary work, but more within its regional level, and what CARTA needs to do as a tolling, you know, organization and how they should be structured. And the two processes are in pretty close alignment from a timing perspective. And of course, we're coordinating, you know, closely with CARTA as well. All right, last slide. And we're bringing this staff recommendation in front of you here. Item number two, so is primarily a formality. We just want to get formal action terminating our agreement with WSP. Again, in parentheses here, this is more procedural. It's not a reflection of the work that we've been received, from them today. So that concludes our presentation.
Thank you, Brian.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I think as this presentation, and in fact, all three presentations really illustrates, we are so incredibly lucky to have Brian Abinat here. You know, I know I'm oftentimes the face of this project out in public, but behind the scenes, I mean, all of these moving pieces that you see that are incredibly complex and technical, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Brian, and I'm just so grateful that he came here with it. The City of Davis let us have him, and I just, you know, he's shy away from the spotlight, and so I'm just purely embarrassed. Because really, like, he is the force behind this project for all this time, on top of all the other things that he does. And so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge him.
Thanks, Lon. I will turn to my colleagues for any clarifying questions or public comments.
Yes,
do we have any questions for staff or public comments? Dr. Stone?
You know, it's disappointing that we have to go out and do this all over again, but it's better to make the decision now to get it right, because to find out later that you should have got done what we're doing now. So thank you. And I certainly agree with the competence of our director of planning. Taking credit is kind of tough sometimes. But we just want you to know you're good, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Dr. Stone. Okay, so without being any other clarifying questions, I will turn to public comment for agenda item number 8, and welcome our first public commenter.
Welcome, Alan Hirsch. Let's be clear, there's an appreciation of doing it right and crossing the I's and dotting the T's, or the other way around, and doing the right thing. Appreciate the tremendous amount of the staff and the thoroughness of this thing. On this particular thing, I'm afraid they might get confirmation bias. And I'm really concerned that enforcement has to be part of this problem, because unlike HOV lanes, when you have extra people sneaking into the managed lanes, you basically reduce the capacity, and the other people who want to pay them pay more. So it's really important we have robust enforcement. If you go out there looking at license plates, you will see many, probably 5 or 10 of the license plates are defaced in some manner and not viewable, so you can't enforce it for that thing. The other thing is, as a lot of us said on the radio, that basically the honor system 3+ in the car is unauditable. It's an honor system. You cannot determine whether someone is cheating, whether they really have 3 people in the back seat, or 1 person in the back seat, because you get 100% tint back when windows on cars. So there needs to be some way to enforce it, because it's not a victim's crime when someone uses the lane illegally. I note that there's an incentive to turn the other way. We saw with HOV lanes, we have 50%, in some cases, almost 50% basically people who shouldn't be using it, because there's no enforcement. There's an incentive to turn the back, tell parents, turn their back on it. You say that because these have more cars, and that's all we're looking for. And if we do that, we have less money for mitigation which is what we're trying to do about this thing. So this has to be robust part of the contract, robust part of basically what was happening to this. I'm really urging that that should be a significant impetus on that. Otherwise, because it's instead of turning the other way, especially if you don't want to admit you made a mistake here. So please make sure your contractor does that, and there's robust and that's really reviewed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ashley. Do we have any other in-person public comment for agenda item number 8? Do we have any hands raised online?
We do not have any hands raised online.
All right, thank you. So we will close public comment on agenda number item number 8, and I'll return it back to the dais to my colleagues.
So back to the whole day.
Hello, Director.
We have a motion by Director Stollard. A second by Director Warren, and I'll turn to Director
I just have a couple questions, and thankfully my colleague over here directly was the part of the packet that I needed to question. So for the disadvantaged business enterprise, I feel like maybe I don't fully understand it, and I would love to understand it. So 6% of the contract is going to be set aside for DDE.
It's a goal. So, depending on the responses that we get and who we select, the consulting teams try as best as they can to find DDEs that they can partner with to meet that 6% goal. It's not a set aside. It's kind of like SQL. If you're not able to meet it and can have, you know, circumstances which are justifiable, then you can continue, you know, with your project without meeting that goal. So it's not a mandate. But in this case, there are some, you know, tasks that, you know, we feel like are not, unique skill set only to what we would call prime consultant. They could use a disadvantaged business to partner with. In this case, we feel like, you know, community outreach and engagement is one of those. It isn't a skill set that's specialized to, say, WSP, which is who we had before. But a lot of the other tests are. Now, DDE themselves, they register with the state of California, and they register under certain codes. And so then when we look at our tests, then Caltrans, they're what's called a Form 90. You look at it, and they tell you which codes to look at to see if, you know, if a DDE is registered for that type of work. And so then we go to their portal, we look that up, and that's how we come up with, you know, here's the scope of work item, here's the amount, here's the number of DDEs that qualify to perform that work, and then therefore, we follow the calculation, and that's how you come up with your goal.
I have feelings, but it does make sense. And so once the RFP is out, if that's part of what we're going to be approving here, then we would, whoever we select through the RFP process would be the ones going through the DDE process, or is YPD staff doing this?
In this case, we're doing an RFQ, so we're selecting based on qualifications, but we will ask them if they feel like they, you know, they can meet the DDE goal. So there's, you know, some discussion there that will occur. And then, your question is put on my mind.
So it's the consultant that is doing a process in which you have a list, and going forward, maybe you need it, maybe you don't. Well, you try.
They fill out a form that we then have to have on file and submit to Caltrans that says, so this was a good case effort. So that's the document of who they contacted and then whether or not that UDE was even, you know, have the availability and the bandwidth to perform that, you know, that task on the team.
Do we actually check in with them regarding just the effort level on it?
Yeah, we have this with several of our other projects, like the Yachty project. We have DDEs on that project, and so they're part of the team. So then when you have, like, team coordination meetings, like, which is commonly on, like, a bi-weekly basis, you know, all of the consulting team, the prime and the sub, are all sort of, you know, in that conversation together.
So when that gives me, that makes me feel a little bit more heartened. Well, because anytime I hear that there is an effort level to try that you don't necessarily have to meet it if you try that, quite frankly, it makes me nervous, particularly when you're talking about disadvantage or underserved businesses. So that's just one. The other last follow-up question on this is, so what you're saying is you have other work that's happened here at Orthopedy and with our agency, BDEs, and so you have been successful, or we've been successful in having consultants that can meet our BDE requirements. Oh, did I overstate it?
Well, I'm just trying to make sure I'm trying to make sure we're comparing apples to apples.
Okay, that's great.
So it's like the Yahtzee project is quite a bit different than this one. That's a very, you know, defined scope of work. And this is a little bit more, you know, it's not as defined in terms of specific activities we're asking them to do, because we have these sort of, you know, general, you know, tasks that we're asking our consultants to work with us on. But nonetheless, in this case, because we think that outreach engagement is an appropriate task that can be subbed out to a DDE, when we have that work to be done, that DDE will be doing that work, right? So once they're on the team, they're committed, you know, that work is committed to them. So it isn't...
But getting on the team, actually, you rely on our consultant,
yeah,
finding them,
yeah,
engaging them,
yeah,
for them to get on the
team. They have to find, in the case of Yahtzee, the DDE that we have for the community outreach, they're actually from Los Angeles area.
Yeah. I think the only, I will not stand in the way, since you guys have already moved forward, and I'm less nervous about that. I will be fascinated and curious about the process. I will absolutely be asking questions and checking in if we were able to meet this goal and how much of the 130,000 actually went to where we aspired for it to go. And so I'll name that and put that here.
Yeah. And we'll make sure to put a focus on how the consulting team is formed, and that, you know, we're putting our best foot forward on this item.
Thanks.
Jennifer? Thank you. I appreciate that, this question and sort of back and forth answers. Same questions. I also have and drill down a little bit more on that. I think if I'm reading it correctly, especially on the spreadsheet, it says that there are 3,556 available DDEs. I assume that we'll say in the state of California. I don't know where the geography relies. So
yeah,
I'm thinking that there may be at least one that is able to be found that would be suitable for the purposes of this effort. So just similarly, was very interested in seeing and paying attention to the process. I mean, I think that means I understand it's a goal, and it's not a requirement from, I believe, just in this place. It is that circumstance of Caltrans, but definitely it's a lot of importance, and I think it's a statement of values issue. The other question I had, and I appreciated Director Early's question just about the process, but I actually also, there was not a lot on process in terms of next steps, if we're coming back, you know, to execute the agreement in September, October. What happens between today and coming back and executing an agreement? That, I'm curious about that process. So, hey, RFQ hits the street, sure. And then what? X amount of time for that RFQ to be out on the street, close to the bids, come back. Who sort of reviews those bids? Is there any sort of intermediary steps between the board or, you know, community writing committee? Curious about that whole process. So thanks.
Great question. Yeah, I think that you pretty much just outlined the process there.
It's not anywhere in here, so I'm curious about it.
Some of it is on the cover sheet of the RFQ itself, where or the audience there is really the consulting team. So yes, the RFQ will go out onto the street, right? We'll give them enough time to compile their statements of qualifications and submit them to us. We will review them, and we need to establish an evaluation team. So there's a formal evaluation process that we'll go through. We'll include internal and external evaluators. And then if the timing works out, we can certainly bring this back to CAC. They meet in July, and probably not again until September. That timing could work out. But again, we're selecting a consulting team based on their qualifications, not on the specific, work product. So I would still be comfortable, coming to the board with, the results of that process without having gone to the CAC if the timing doesn't work out. So we really don't want to hold up any more work with that support to the team. We can accommodate that to have the CAC review it.
Thank you. Appreciate all that.
I appreciate that. Oh, wait. Can I get rid of the shirt? I think the last thing that, pretty damn amazing. You really have. I would be curious about what that panel looks like, right? Because here you have a request for false statements, so I appreciate you saying that. How is it unbiased? I'm curious about, just acknowledging the fact that it's been an amazing partnership, right? Potentially, it could be this could be this company, it could be another. And so just recognizing.
Well, to the extent that you can eliminate any bias in the consult question, but you start by establishing your evaluation criteria, which is, how you're going to base your scores for consultants under each category. And so it's kind of like a rubric, right? So, here's the scale under this, category criterion, right? And then here, if they have, X amount of experience here, then you give them, in this corner, right? So it's really trying to apply, as objective of a criteria as possible. And then hopefully, with enough evaluators, you generally end up with a consensus. Not always, but usually do.
Thank you.
Quick question and then some comments and I'm good. Who is the 6%, is that our YTE policy? Where's the 6% from? Is that safety? What is that?
No, well, the 6% was what we calculated as a goal for this project in compliance with federal requirements.
So it changes variable? So like on the graph here, it wasn't 6%?
No. It was something else.
Got it. Okay.
And in fact, I received word back from Caltrans today that if they feel that our goal should be 10%, because they reviewed they reviewed our form 90 and said, well, we're sure there's another area here that the DDUs could participate in. So that's what they have signed off on is a 10%. So that will get changed in the RFQ that goes out.
And if I may, so I worked for a DVE consulting firm for several years, and so I learned a bit about this process, trying to get on teams and get work for our firm. So there are certain federal rules that agencies have to comply with, and the size of your agency matters, right? The larger agencies have mandatory goals that they have to meet. Smaller agencies have targets. Right, so they provide more flexibility to smaller agencies like ours. That said, there are also agencies that set their own goals that go above and beyond the federal minimums and requirements. And so, if that is something that this board wants to do, that is absolutely something that's within our power. Mm-hmm. Now, there's trade-offs in that, right? Because if you set mandatory goals, then you have less fixed flexibility. We don't award massive amounts of contracts compared to some other agencies, and so we have less flexibility in terms of meeting those goals. So there are trade-offs involved, but it is a discretion of the agency and the agency board to decide how aggressive we want to be with our DDE targets. So we have the feds really establish minimums, but there's a lot more that we can do.
Yeah, thank you. So just quickly, we'll wrap up. Yeah, I just wanted to, there's two pieces I want to touch on. One is, Brian, earlier you brought up kind of discussions that we had a few months ago around the equity plans on this, and I'm pretty sure, Director Early and I are on the CARSA board with Supervisor Viegas and Supervisor Desmond Sack. So we've met a couple of times over the past few months and starting to get that worked on, and then we have representation on that board. And I do know that there's definitely an interest from both of us in being hands-on and coming to this board, reporting back on what some of those plans look like as they move along. Around the enforcement piece, I just spent a few days out in Denver with SACOG. We visited the Colorado Department of Transportation, and one of the big pieces they talked about is what one of our public commenters referenced was kind of this evolving trend in enforcement and how they continue to evolve around that and different tools that they're using there in hot lanes that they've had for over a decade and more and continue to expand in the Denver area right now. They're doing it currently. The different tools that they're using, they don't have the dividers down the middle, but they do have lots of different technology in place that they're implementing and getting funds for to do exactly that. They have the numbers provide the information around the people that they know are violating that, that are moving from lane to lane, that are not doing it, and they have fine structures set up, $75 per instance, they have some report back from who pays, when they get all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of out there. One of the things that I took back from that was Director Vieira, who was there on the trip with us as well, was really hoping that we can find another tolling agency or group like ours who set something up recently and maybe get a couple of board members, people from Carter, whomever, to go and sit and have those conversations with them and learn from what they're doing, what they've just done in Colorado and what they're doing in Denver. Maybe a little bit different. They've been around for a longer time. It's not fresh what they're doing and change they've made is, but not just getting up and running off the ground. It'd be beneficial for us to try and do that and just, dive more into it if that's possible. So those are some of the pieces that, as we work through our work on CARTA and our partners there, that a lot of the things that are here before us that we see, especially on this item, around the equity framework and the tolling rates and all that, is the work that's going to be happening moving forward. So looking forward to doing that with you as well. So,
one quick clarification question. Just I wanted to clarify. So this is going to be revised to 10%. Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. So any other comments from my colleagues? Okay. So seeing them, remind me again who had the, was it? Director Stollard, moved by Director Stollard, seconded by Director Warren. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? Motion carried 5-0.
Great.
All right, thank you. So we are now to agenda item number 9, administrative reports. 9A, I will look to any of my colleagues in the dais for board member verbal reports. Down to great. Okay. So why is down there today?
No. I went on vacation in May and I came back, so I can tell you, what did I miss? Well, I had
okay,
to
go on
vacation. Yeah. I had to go on vacation because... My boss at home. So, the only time you get to go to Asia, we're not going back. Yeah. And we were in good hands, though, I think, to Director Chapman's point. The staff here at YTD, great crew, great leadership, treats you well, very diligently, and I want to thank for Ted publicly. Best thing I could have done was hire him out of Sac Final back to District 3. I was very happy about that. He didn't know he was going to be working on yellow. I didn't tell you that, right? one of his compadres asked, what are you going to be working on? At yellow lady. So, it was great to be a part of this. We're still not done. We've got some challenges, but great opportunity to learn from a lot going out. As far as the tolling authority, items. It's not something we're normally used to doing here in Caltrans. In May of 2023, I was in the CPC meeting in Oakland, looking at the people debate the 37 project and talk about the toll authority and maybe 194. And I'm thinking, oh man, we've got a lot of work to do. And your staff stepped up. I want to thank SACOG too, but to establish CARTA was a big thing. So just, I want to give my appreciation to everybody on this team, and I'm proud of all of you.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah. Any other board member reports?
Really quick one. Supervisor Rojas and I have routinely hold a agricultural issues forum, and the sort of, the two our districts represent everything west of 505 in Yolo County. And so our last hearing was, or forum was last week, one of the 110 degree days. And so thankfully it was held indoors at the new Cape Day Valley Community Health Center. But there were about 45 people in attendance, many members of the agriculture community, particularly farmers, but also a number of other farm workers as well, but a bunch of mixture of folks. And the issue came up on a number of occasions about the fixed route service in the Cape Day Valley. And so not just fixed route service to the casino, but sort of. So it's an issue that I want to raise here. It's an issue I'd love to have further discussion with staff around. A lot of the farmers in the Cape Day Valley have, many of them have employees who they believe will utilize fixed route service if it was offered further than the casino. Perhaps there's also some ability to do, you know, essentially some kind of a shuttle beyond the casino. So it's, you know, just wanted to have raise that on behalf of Supervisor Ross and myself, and it's also just either a future agenda officially, and definitely want to have a further conversation with staff about the issues that we heard from a bunch of community members in the western part of the county. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dr. Chris. Any other board member comments? Just for more.
I want to say thank you to everyone for remembering it was my birthday event. I was going to be staying home to come to a meeting, but what an amazing meeting. I mean, it's a historical meeting. And also, I'm not sure if it's the time, but on the, in the item, there's the long range calendar, and I think that what's coming up is the Beeline Progress Report. And aside from the public comment that shows in our email today, that I have had feedback from riders who stopped meeting winners and said that they had an event where four of them were stranded. The bus just couldn't come back for them. And they did get a ride home from Good Samaritan. But anecdotally, it seems like the bookends of the beginning of the day and the end of the day are the problems. And I think that microtransit really works for the rest of the day. But they need to get back to the hub in Davis so they can get to Sacramento at the end of the day. And then if the bus ends at 4:30 and it doesn't come, they just miss getting home. So I know that it's going to come back to us, and I know that you'll have a great, solution. But I just want to mention that there's, you know, people that really need our services.
Thank you. Any other board member verbal reports? Okay, we will now go to 9E, Transdev verbal report. Do we have someone online for Transdev?
I know Michael was driving back from, he was on the road. I'm not sure if he was able to call in. Do we have Michael calling in?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Sorry, just one quick second here. I'm trying to get in, promoted in. Michael, you're in.
Do you hear us, Michael?
You're muted.
Michael, you're muted. If you're, yep, there you go.
Yep, it had to go through the motions. Good evening. Good evening, Chair Chapman, Vice Chair Dante, directors, and a special happy birthday to Director Lauren.
Thank you.
Good to report. We, with recruitment, is continuing to go very well. We actually started a new class today, and we're looking at this is going to be the last class we're probably going to do for at least a month or more. We're in a very good position right now to, you know, cover what we have currently in planning and put us in a very good spot for future planning. To where we haven't been for the last few years, of course, but we are in a very good position right now. Any questions?
I don't think so. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. 9C, Executive Director's verbal report.
Thank you, Chair. And if we may, Norma, can you go ahead and pull up the last slide, which is the long-range calendar? I want to cover some of the items I want to touch on. Maybe you reported off the long-range calendar, so I thought we might just do it all at once. So it's been a few months since we've done a long-range calendar. We're excited now. We have a work plan and a budget to continue moving forward with some of our items, and we've got some new ones coming. Now, we don't have a meeting in August, so just to remind everybody, there is no meeting in August. September's looking really long. Some of the stuff may have to move,
But it's all important. So let me just dive in. We've got a public hearing and possible action on restoration of the Route 44. That's the South Davis Express that was approved as part of the budget tonight. Our goal is to restore all the express services this fall as soon as possible. And I know that our team has been coordinating with transit to hopefully ensure that we have sufficient drivers and vehicles to make that happen. So we want to have that possible action move quickly. And then, as Director Lauren just mentioned, B-Line. We have our B-Line progress report. This is our six months worth of data progress report, and we wanted to fold that in a preliminary discussion of service changes in winter. So bringing that to you September, and then coming back in October, having gone through that some public outreach and refinement with a public hearing and possible action on that service change and expansion in Winters. We also, the Yahtzee project came up tonight. There's been a ton of work happening on the Yahtzee project, and we just had such full agendas. We really haven't had a chance to even bring that to you in a long time. But we do want to make sure we get that to you because we're approaching some, we've wrapped up a ton of public outreach and as well as existing conditions analysis and want to touch base with you on what we've heard and what we've learned before we kind of move forward with making some decisions on the direction of that project. And then also an update on the Woodland Transit Center. So as you'll recall, you approved us going to a 30% design and working with our consultants to get the 30% design and making sure there's no fatal flaws with the location that we've chosen. We are wrapping that work up and we'll be prepared to bring it to you as soon as September. The next step then would be to go to 100% design, the fully complete design, including and making sure we can identify the funding for implementation, and then once 100% design is completed, you know, execute the project and actually work towards moving in through our new transit center. And then the Caltrans letter of commitment to CARTA, the Capital Area Regional Tolling Authority. Those of you who are involved may recall that Caltrans made certain commitments around how they would be supporting CARTA, some of the services they would provide. So that letter is going to be coming to CARTA and also to this board for review and consideration. Now, there's a new item on there that was not in the packet, which is a response to a grand jury report on homelessness in Yolo County. So let me take a moment to just talk about that. This grand jury report was released several weeks ago. It has a broad range of actions related to homelessness in Yolo County, but one of the recommendations is around the Fourth and Hope facility here in Woodland, located in the northeast corner of Woodland. It's not currently served by public transit. They are doing some private transportation, but the concern has been raised, and we've heard it. Not just in this grand jury report, we have heard it, that the service that they have does not meet the needs that are out there, and they are interested in seeing if Yolo TV would provide services to their facility. So, you know, of course, we're not required to do exactly what the grand jury requests, but we do need to have a response, so we'll be bringing that response to you in September, that draft response before it's due, and I'm coordinating with Director Stollard, of course, on that, as well as Chair Chapman, and treating them as my informal ad hoc committee on that before it comes to you in September. So that's everything that's on the agenda for September. Again, I realize that we figure till midnight if we do all those things. So we'll be working on figuring out what we can shift around. In October, again, we want to bring back the B-Line service changes in winter. We want to talk about, this is something that came up earlier, these special workshops on the Yolo TV budget. We want to bring to you a proposal for that. How many workshops, what are the topics we want to cover, what are the goals of that? So we think our first step is to really just have that conversation as a board and get your input on what are your goals for that process, what do you want to get out of it? So that's what we want. We're going to bring you a draft of that in October, get your feedback, and then, you know, based on that, move forward with executing and developing those special workshops. Short-range transit plan is coming along as well. We are hoping to bring you an update in October on that. And then by that point, it'll be time for our first quarter finance update for the new fiscal year. So lots on the horizon there in terms of long-range calendars. A couple of things I want to quickly mention. We did launch microtransit in the community of Yolo on July 1st. So when we're reporting in September on the status of microtransit, we'll be telling you how it's been going in the first couple of months of operation there. And also, we just wrapped up a series of open houses in Davis, Woodland, and West Sacramento to get input on both our short-range transit plan and our Yahtzee active transportation core project. We had about 80 people that attended across those three open houses, which is great. We'll be bringing you updates and the results of that. We do have a survey for our short-range transit pendant currently live, and it's going to stay open for a while to solicit more feedback. And then finally, one of the things, we just did those workshops in Davis, we're in the West Sacramento, but before that, we actually did a bunch of workshops in rural communities all throughout the county, particularly on active transportation. But because we were going out to communities that don't hear from us very much, we got all kinds of feedback on all kinds of transportation issues, as you can imagine. And our associate planner, Brenda Loma Lee, who is the lead on that, she's very fired up and on what are some of the different transportation solutions that our rural communities need. And so Brian and I have been talking about further out in the calendar, we want to bring you just a snapshot of what have we heard from our rural communities about what their transportation needs are, and what are some of the, what are they saying their needs are, and what are some of the kind of innovative programs and ideas that are out there in other rural counties to serve these rural communities. So we're looking forward to finding a not-so-busy time on the agenda to bring some of that information to you. And with that, I will wrap up and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Autumn. Any questions for Autumn before we go to public comment?
I have just a couple questions. So for the goals of format that happened in October, great that you're going to come to us, and I'm assuming that you're also going to do this, but I just want to name it, that you're also going to go to our city managers and get some of the feedback, right, that can be incorporated to the draft. That will help us in regards to timing as well. You don't have city manager, you have a CEO? Yeah. Okay, there you go. And the same there. And then one of the things that at least would be helpful for me as we talked about incorporating data, needing to maybe wait for the data to be the different machinery, equipment, buses, and that kind of thing, not necessarily anything on the agenda, but I would love to, in your executive report, as we lead up to December, just get a quick update on it, just how it's going. It's going really well. I hate to get to December and then find out, like, we've got 6 months of support, right? So that would be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Any other questions? Director Perez, the piece that Autumn brought up around the feedback from rural communities, does that encompass what you were, are you okay with that timeline?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, so with that, we will open public comment on agenda item number 9. Welcome.
Hi, and Alan, there's a number of suggestions. September, you're having a hearing on putting the express buses back in Davis. Why not have this board meeting in Davis? We're hearing good pink buzz in the community. I think it's appropriate. QR code should be put into every bus stop so people can have access the on-time application, which is very helpful this evening, but you need to have a QR to find it. The grand jury report on homelessness. We are in New York City. We're not used to riding buses. If you want the middle class to ride the buses, that's the real key. You need to make people feel safe, but we aren't used to that. So I think it's important security be discussed as part of that project, cameras and buses and whatnot. I think this is the real humanity. I mean, we want to really... I look at the light rail system north out of Sacramento. It runs right by Lowe's and Fish's, a transit-dependent community, and they didn't put a light rail stop there. Coincidence? Was it a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, it's a bad thing, but there are reasons. Let's talk about that. And in terms of the quality rush for this button, which Jeffy brought up, and I experienced this evening, I think your board would be well served to have a quality report that comes every month to the board, on time performance, some sort of metric of quality, so this buses and things like that, number of complaints, or something like that. So there's an emphasis on doing more route miles and whatnot, but the quality that's really important for riders is dependent on it. So thank you very much for all your hard work.
Thank you, Alan. Is there any other? Yeah. Welcome.
Again, Michael Barnbaum, Public Transportation Advocacy and Consulting. Want to thank the Executive Director for bringing up the long-range calendar. A lot of the things we talked about earlier, Mr. Chairman, in the budget item, I just want to say since that item to now, I had privately met with and I want to recognize Chief Operating Officer Daisy Romero in the audience. We're definitely going to have a meeting between the board meetings because of the roughly 60-day gap. We're definitely going to talk about item number 4 that was brought up in the testimony that was read into the record during the budget item. But just having an overall budget workshop and the items that were talked about today under item 5 on your agenda are certainly good talking topics we can discuss, I think, and have a healthy discussion in a budget workshop. But also, like, I'm going to have, hopefully in August, we're going to find a mutual date and time to do so, to have, you know, even a one-on-one or one-on-three, you know, up here just during business hours on a weekday to go over some of that stuff and maybe fine-tune what could be brought later before the board. Loves the discussion about the 16 trips we talked about on the 42 A and B, if we can meet the challenges of vehicle operator availability and recruitment and retention, along with anything that could be done for the cost sharing agreements. That's the key thing. Cost sharing agreement for a ballpark shuttle, eliminating any liability of any transit operator doing such a shuttle of the direct operating costs being responsible borne on them. Okay. So thank you for bringing this back.
Thank you, Michael. Is there any other in-person public comment for agenda item number 9? Do we have any hands raised online?
We do not have any hands raised online.
Okay. So we will close the agenda, public comment on agenda item number 9, and I'll return to the dais for any further questions on or additions for Lawrence. First vote.
Move it, Jeremy, Mr. Chair.
Any of my colleagues have anything else for Lawrence?
For a second.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Okay, for the record, the meeting is adjourned at 8:07 p.m.